Hi, everyone, and welcome to the ACTUS podcast, a bi-weekly program dedicated to bringing you closer to the difference makers in CDI and sharing the latest news that's going to be relevant to CDI and to ACTUS as a whole. I'm Carla Kozak, Editorial Manager of Products and Events for ACTUS, and I am also thrilled to be your host for today's show. Today, we're going to dive into the topic of auditing, and my guest is Michelle A. Hamilton, RN, CCDSO, CRC, Ambulatory Clinical Documentation Integrity Specialist at a health system in New England. Now, a quick reminder that the ACTUS podcast offers 0.5 ACTUS CEU for the first 4 days after posting, which can be used towards your CCDS or CCDSO recertification requirements. I'll also share the instructions at the end of the show, so be sure to stay tuned for that. Before we jump into our topic and our conversation with Michelle, just a brief word from today's sponsor. Today's episode of the ACTUS podcast is brought to you by ACTUS Encore Clinical Encoding Online. Join us Tuesday, August 4th through Thursday, August 6th for this special virtual event featuring sessions recorded live during the 2026 ACTUS conference. That's the entire clinical encoding track from the conference. This much-loved staple of the annual conference features core clinical encoding components vital to all those engaged in ongoing medical reviews. Topics this year include documentation for cancer, heart failure, HIV, and more conditions, documentation in the ICU setting, stroke coding, and more. Plus, you can take advantage of the opportunity to earn 8.5 ACTUS, AHIMA, NARI, and ANCC CEUs. So use the link in the show notes to save your seat today. Now, before I dive into the conversation with Michelle, I want to set the stage a little bit about the current state of auditing. So according to a 2026 ACTUS survey, when asked if they had a staff auditing process, 25% of respondents indicated that they have a peer-to-peer staff auditing process. 50% approximately indicated that they have a staff auditing process using their department's CDI educators. 44% approximately indicated that they have a staff auditing process using their department's leadership team. 22% approximately stated they have a staff auditing process that uses an external vendor or consulting company. And 7% said they're in the process of developing a staff auditing process internally. Approximately 1% indicated that they're in the process of contracting with external vendors or consultants to provide staff audits. And approximately 1% said they have no plans to develop a staff auditing process. So you can see based on these statistics that more than half of programs are auditing to some extent, whether that's peer-to-peer, whether they use their CDI educators, or whether they use their leadership team or an external vendor or consulting. However, there is that small percentage that is in the process of developing auditing or have no plans currently to develop that auditing process. And with that, I would like to dive into my conversation with Michelle. Thank you again for joining me today, Michelle. I'm really excited to have you here to talk about auditing. It's such a popular topic among CDI professionals, and it's such an important part of what this profession does. So I want to start our conversation by asking, can you just explain for anybody that might not be familiar with it, what is an audit? And can you tell us a little bit about your experience with auditing?
Sure. Well, thank you for having me. So in our CDI world, an audit is basically it's a structured review of documentation, coding, and processes. And we're looking to ensure that we're meeting compliance with guidelines and making sure that we're aligned with regulatory and organizational standards. And in healthcare, audits are used to validate documentation supports our coding, looking to look back and reflect that patient's severity of illness meets quality and reimbursement requirements. And basically, honestly, they're truly safety checks for organizations. They aren't really looking to catch mistakes. It's about learning and improving. And like I said, they really act as safety checks to make sure our documentation clearly reflects the care provided and it supports accurate coding. And most importantly, it really helps keep our patients safe. We're identifying opportunities through audits that we can provide education that benefits staff and patient outcomes. And that's the important part, our patient outcomes.
Absolutely. It's so important for so many different reasons, all of those that you've just listed there. So can we talk a little bit more about like what exactly you're auditing or who you're auditing and how you're determining what a good audit target is?
Sure. So really the true answer is we can audit everything and anything. But in the CDI world, we focus on a few areas. So to just name a couple, coding-based audits, we're looking at accuracy and compliance. We're looking to make sure code assignment, integrity aligns with documentation. We're targeting HCC and RAF scores, making sure we're capturing accuracy, missed HCCs, incorrectly captured HCCs. We're looking for coding specificity, unspecified versus specified diagnoses. We're looking to see code assignment validation. You know, does the documentation support the ICD-10 codes? We're looking at overcoding and undercoding risks. We're looking at problem list versus visit note versus billing reconciliation, you know, the bane of everybody's existence. CKD documentation, you know, it's coded, but it's unspecified instead of saying CKD stage 3B. Diabetes with complications, but there's no linkage in the documentation. And then we go a little step further. We're looking at medical and clinical-based audits. So we're looking at the clinical validation and documentation integrity. We're looking at that clinical truth in provider documentation, not just the codes. So clinical validation of the diagnosis supported by the clinical evidence in the chart. Meet criteria. Chronic condition management, is the conditions addressed annually, you know, especially for the RAF? Diagnosis linkage again, medical necessity, were diagnoses relevant to the encounter? And then that one step further for those CDI audits, where we are bringing everything together, coding, clinical workflows, you know, this is where CDI shines. We're looking at documentation, coding, and risk capture alignment all together. Are suspect conditions being reviewed? Are pre-visit and in-visit planning tools being used? What kind of visit types are we looking at? Query opportunities, you know, who do we audit? You know, we're expanding that coding and clinical lens and looking at that provider and population where coding and clinical risk all intersect. So those provider groups, we're looking at that high volume provider care where they have the biggest RAF impact. Maybe specialists with the high risk diagnoses like cardiology and endocrinology. New providers are a great place to look. Documentation and coding habits not yet established. You know, they're brand new. Then we can look at even providers with low RAF capture, their missed conditions or high ones. Providers with high denial rates. Coding discrepancies. I mean, this is just to name a few. The list is very long.
Yeah, there's so many different opportunities. Like you said, coding specificity, looking
it's
at over it is over and under coding, that billing reconciliation, the clinical validation, medical necessity. There are just so many different opportunities to look at different, to audit different things to ensure that it's all being done correctly and that the information is needed to show the full clinical picture. And I think you implied this while you were talking, but can you a little more specifically say, like, what are the benefits of doing that? Why is it important that you're auditing and looking for that medical necessity, that coding specificity, et cetera? Like, what are the benefits associated with performing these audits?
So, I mean, there's a couple of benefits. You know, one, obviously, for compliance reasons, you know, we want to make sure that we're following regulatory requirements, making sure that we're compliant with our coding. two, we want to make sure that we are capturing the true clinical picture of that patient. You know, and we're going back to that patient safety. And it doesn't matter what role we play, whether, you know, we're a physician, a nurse, a CDI specialist, a biller, we're all very important part of patient safety and making sure that medical record is reflecting that patient correctly and making sure that that is accurate. So no matter where that patient goes, they have the most accurate information in that chart so they get the best quality care.
Yeah, it really does come back to that key tenet of what CDI specialists do, which is ensuring that that documentation is complete so the patients are getting the best quality of care and the continuity of care. What are some of the challenges you've faced? I know you have some pretty extensive experience with auditing. So like what have you encountered and how have you overcome challenges?
Oh, there's just a few there, right?
Just a few, I'm sure.
Okay. So a few challenges. Let's see. Where do we start here? So the biggest challenge that I've encountered is understanding the why behind audits. Everything we do has a why behind it. Your why is what creates buy-in to whomever our audience is made of. We all want to know why we need to do something. And that's the key right there, explaining why something is important to your audience. Whether it's a patient, staff, colleague, our providers, why is it important for them? We can change the way people see audits by sharing the why. Our audience wants to know why audits are important. We want them to know why and how it's going to support them in their everyday work. Again, sharing how it's going to help them is going to create the buy-in.
Yeah, creating buy-in is so important because if you want people to engage with the work that you're doing, they have to understand why you're doing it and get invested the way you are. So I think that's so important and definitely a challenge to overcome. So a lot of people, I think when we talk about audits, they view it as something that's punitive. What would you say to that? Do you see audits as being punitive or do they serve another purpose?
I understand why auditing can feel punitive, especially if it's approached as a fault finding or checking for mistakes. But in my experience, it's not the purpose. At least that's not how it should be. It really shouldn't be that way. Auditing is really a tool for improvement. It provides that objective data that helps identify gaps or trends, and it's really opportunities to strengthen documentation, workflows, and outcomes. When it's done well, it supports staff rather than penalizes them, and that's really the key. I found that the key is how the findings are communicated. If audits are framed as collaborative and educational, they build trust and engagement. If they're framed as criticism, then they create resistance and the door shuts right there. We should always try and approach audits as a partnership, focusing on what we can improve rather than what went wrong. And that mindset usually shifts the perception in a positive way. When audits are done right, they don't create that fear. They create clarity, accountability, and an opportunity to improve.
I love what you said about audits as collaborative and being a collaboration versus being a criticism, because I think that's such an important point. You're right that it is a partnership. It's two groups working together to improve something versus one group criticizing the other. It really is a collaboration to see that improvement. So I think that's such an important point that you made.
I agree. When you're able to work together, you can start improving things so much easier and it just works so much better when you collaborate together.
Absolutely. Now, how often should organizations be performing audits? Like, do you have a recommendation or can you share how often you're auditing?
So the frequency of audits really depends on the organization, but in general, audits should be performed on a regular, ongoing basis and really kind of using that risk-based approach. So most organizations conduct at least annual comprehensive audits, but with more frequent targeted or focused audits, such as quarterly or monthly reviews in those higher risk areas. So usually in healthcare, there's often a combination of concurrent monitoring, periodic audits, and then what they call event-driven audits when issues arise. The reason for this is that auditing too infrequently allows issues to go unnoticed, while ongoing layered auditing helps identify problems early. It's going to help ensure compliance and then supports continuous improvement. The goal isn't just to audit on a schedule, it's to audit often enough to be proactive to identify issues. And that's going to help support providers, support the team, and continuously improve both quality and compliance. And they should be done regularly, so they help capture issues early, going to help stay compliant, going to continue that continuous improvement. It's going to help adjust for risk.
Absolutely. Now, when it comes to auditing, I know something that you've said is start from the beginning. And I think this speaks to a little bit of what you were just talking about. So why is it so important to just hit the ground running with audits? And like you said, start from the beginning.
Right. Yeah. So when I say start from the beginning, so it's like starting with that original clinical documentation, the source of the truth, and working forward. It's really important because that ensures what actually happened clinically is fully and accurately captured in the record, coding, and reporting. So if you don't start from the beginning, you're going to be risking missing gaps like undocumented conditions, incomplete diagnoses, or inconsistencies between the clinical picture and what was coded. So in auditing, starting from the source allows you to validate completeness, accuracy, and integrity of the entire record, which ultimately supports better quality outcomes, compliance, and data reliability. You're going to ensure that completeness, nothing is missed. You're going to validate that true clinical picture. And in the CDI world, the provider documentation is that foundation. This is the beginning where we start. Coding and risk adjustment depends on what is documented, and it's not based on assumptions. It's what is written. So starting at the source ensures records reflect real clinical events, not just what made it into the coding system. We all play an essential role in that auditing process. So for providers, this begins once they start with that organization, and it continues ongoing throughout their training. Early engagement allows us to introduce our program, build rapport, and equip new providers with resources they need to succeed. Because, you know, let's face it, providers have very minimal exposure to coding when they first start. We're introducing a very unfamiliar concept. It's a foreign language to them as they're trying to balance a very busy clinical schedule. So audits help strengthen that initial training by ensuring that, you know, new hires are trained effectively, understand organizational expectations, and develop that strong documentation and coding practices. And then we get to identify those gaps early, any misdiagnoses, lack of specificity, unsupported conditions. And that prevents that downstream of errors, because if we fix the errors early in documentation, we're not going to find those incorrect codings later, those compliance issues later, denials later. We're going to be fixing them sooner rather than later. So in CDI, we're starting from the beginning means reviewing the patient's story first, clinical indicators, provider documentation, and supporting that evidence before even looking at the coding. That way, we're validating that the documentation truly supports the codes and not trying to justify the codes after the fact. So starting from the beginning ensures that we're validating the original documentation and clinical story. And that helps identify gaps early, ensures completeness, and supports accurate coding and compliance, and keeps our patient story accurate and keeps our patients safe.
Yeah, you really get that full picture when you go back to the very beginning, which I think is so important just based on everything you've said about auditing, that if you don't have the full picture, then you're not getting
right. The
entire story. You're not looking at all of the pieces. So being able to start from the beginning really allows that. And like you said, it helps identify any issues early. So it's before it gets denied or before it hits that point where you need to go back. So I think that's so important and such a great mentality to have towards auditing. If there's one thing our listeners walk away with from this podcast episode, I think it really should be start from the beginning.
Yeah. I agree.
I want to thank you, Michelle, for being here today. This has been such a helpful conversation. Unfortunately, we have run out of time for this discussion. But as always, if our audience has any questions about the topic, they can feel free to email the ACTIS team at info@actis.org. Really appreciate your time, Michelle, and thank you so much for taking the time to share something I can tell you're really passionate about.
Thank you for having me.
Now it's time for the ACTIS update. If you're a regular listener of the ACTIS podcast, you know that this segment features the latest news on what's going on inside the association. And it's a great way to stay on top of what ACTIS is doing, how you can contribute, how you can stay involved with your CDI community. So first, I want to remind you that our call for speakers for our 2027 in-person events is currently open and will remain open through August 3rd. So that deadline is quickly approaching. We definitely want to encourage you to get your applications in sooner rather than later. And applying is super easy. You only need a few things beyond your idea to apply. So we'll need to start with all of the speaker info, whether that's your info and you're speaking alone or your info plus info of any co-speakers. We do only allow a maximum of 3 speakers per session. And 2 of those speakers will receive complimentary registration to the event. You'll also need a title for your session, something catchy and fun that tells people what your session is going to be about. So that way, if it makes it onto our agenda, people can easily find out if it's going to be of interest to them. A description that lets our events committee, who evaluates all applications, understand what you're going to cover in your session. This should be 1 to 2 paragraphs and just really provide an overview of all the key points you're going to hit so that the committee can understand why your session is important to the event. We'll also ask for 3 to 5 learning outcomes. These are just brief descriptions of the knowledge that attendees will walk away with, what they can expect to learn by the time the session is over. And then finally, this is not required, but our events committee finds it really helpful if you include a draft outline or a draft of your PowerPoint slides, whatever you have available, because it just provides them with further information on what your session would discuss. This is particularly helpful if there are two proposals that seem to cover the same topic. It helps them determine which one might be a better fit. So when you go to submit your application, I do want to note that you will need to create an account. It is not the same as your ACTIS.org login. But if you applied to the conference last year to speak, you will be able to use the same login credentials. If you're not sure, you can always create a new login. I want to note that all 3 of our in-person events will be taking place in fabulous Las Vegas, which is just the perfect location for us as we celebrate 20 years of ACTIS. The annual ACTIS conference will be held at the Caesars Forum Conference Center, and our room block will be in Harrah's Las Vegas, which is connected to the conference center by a skywalk. The 3 events we are looking for applications to speak for are our ACTIS conference, which takes place May 16th to the 19th. And if you're not sure what topics might be of interest, a couple of recommendations we have include leadership skills, clinical topics for pediatric or adult diagnoses, risk adjustment and quality, obstetrics, labor and delivery, and data and analytics. We also have a more complete list that will be linked in the show notes. It's not required that you choose from this list, but it's a great place to start if you're unsure. We're also looking for proposals for our ACTIS Symposium Outpatient CDI, which will take place immediately before the ACTIS conference in the same location on May 15th to the 16th. Some topics we're looking for there are building a new program or expanding an existing outpatient program, information on post-encounter or post-visit reviews, compliance, OIG targets, and risk adjustment. And again, you can use the link in today's show notes to see the full list of suggested topics. Lastly, we are looking for topics for our ACTIS Physician Advisor Forum, which will run concurrently with the ACTIS Symposium Outpatient CDI. So again, that's May 15th to the 16th in the same location of Las Vegas. Some topics we're looking for here are building or expanding a physician advisor program, coding basics for physician advisors, data analytics, artificial intelligence, and regulatory and compliance updates that are going to be important to physicians or for physician advisors to know. So again, we would love to receive your application. You're also welcome to submit to any combination of the events, as many different topics as you would like. Just do so by August 3rd, because that is when the application will be closing. The events committee will review the applications on a rolling basis after that and be contacting folks in September and October with decisions. My second update for you, or request I should say, is that the ACTIS Resource Library Committee is looking for your help. They need people in the industry to submit sample resources for potential publication on the ACTIS website so that we can stay on top of the latest of what's going on in the industry and providing people with what they need. The committee is looking for resources that you or your organization has created for your department. Any resources submitted to the committee will be reviewed for compliance and utility and then published with appropriate attribution to the contributor in the ACTIS Resource Library to help other members develop their programs. Some things they're looking for include clinical materials related to common conditions, sample policies and procedures, sample job descriptions, examples of mission statements, examples of appeal letters for common conditions, and anything else that you think could be helpful to ACTIS members in their CDI endeavors. You can use the link in today's show notes to quickly and easily submit your resource. And I just want to thank you in advance for your time and contribution to this larger ACTIS community. As always, you can find the link for more information in today's show notes as well. As a reminder, before we close out, each ACTIS podcast offers 0.5 ACTIS CEU, which can be used towards recertifying your CCDS or CCDSO credential for those who listen to the show in the first 4 days from the time of publication. To receive your 0.5 CEU, go to the show page on ACTIS.org by clicking on the ACTIS podcast link under the free resources tab, and then click on today's episode from the list on that page. Scroll down to the recording of today's episode and press play. At the end of the video, once the timer hits zero, a link to the CEU evaluation will appear. Click on that, take the survey, and your certificate will be automatically emailed to you upon submitting a brief evaluation. To ensure your certificate reaches you and does not get trapped in your organization's spam filters, we suggest that you use a personal email address when completing the CEU evaluation form. Those instructions are also laid out on the show page, so you can follow along there too. Note that the cutoff for today's episode, CEU, is Sunday, July 19th at 11 p.m. Eastern. After that point, the CEU period will close, and you will unfortunately not be eligible for the 0.5 CEU for this week's episode. With that, we've reached the end of today's ACTIS podcast episode. Thanks for hanging in there with us. We'll be back on Wednesday, July 29th with a new episode hosted by ACTIS editor Jess Flegel. If you'd like to receive reminders about each episode, go ahead and make sure you're subscribed to our free weekly newsletter, CDI Strategies. It always includes a link to the new episode as soon as it's available. You can also choose to listen to the show at any time on the ACTIS website or via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. And all the links we discussed during today's episode will be available in the show notes. As always, we'd really appreciate it if you take a minute to leave a 5-star review on the podcast app to help others find our show. Our intro and outro music is Media Noche by Deanne Key, and our ad music is Take Me Higher by Jazar, both obtained from the Free Music Archive. If you have any suggestions for future guests or topics, please do email us at info@actus.org. And until next time, take care, everyone.